Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 26th, 2024. It has been 3,742 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 66 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 63 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Thursday and Friday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. Our assessment that United States military aid to Ukraine will start to arrive by the end of the week was accurate. We maintain our earlier assessment that enough aid to have a material impact on stabilizing Ukrainian ground and air defenses will be in the theater of war within 3 to 5 weeks. 2. Russian forces will continue to intensify their ground attacks and airstrikes to maximize damage and attrition before significant aid from the US, the Czech Republic-led ammunition initiative, Belgium, the European Union, and the United Kingdom arrive in Ukraine. 3. The Russian breach of Ukrainian defensive lines in the area of Ocheretene and Novobakhmutivka in Donetsk Oblast threatens to force Ukrainian troops to withdraw from the Durna River line in the Avdiivka area of operation. 4. Ukrainian forces continue to have insufficient ammunition resources, particularly short-range air defense systems, which enable the holding of existing defensive lines and protect the civilian population. 5. The world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox with renewed nuclear threats by Kremlin leadership and Polish leadership openly discussing forward deploying United States nuclear weapons. 6. Russian forces have an operational goal to capture Chasiv Yar by May the 9th, regardless of cost. 7. In our assessment, Russia is setting conditions for a wider attack in the direction of Vuhledar, but we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. And Moscow is under increasing pressure due to the imminent increase in military aid to Ukraine. 8. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 9. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. Inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 10. The attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and the situation is more serious, especially at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. On Thursday, Russia intensified its attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure. In Kharkiv Oblast, the VKS, also known as the Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed the village of Novoosynovo, south of Kupiansk, injuring 2 pensioners. In Balaklia, near Izum, an Iskander-M short-range ballistic missile struck the railroad station. The missile was said to explode as an airburst and was armed with a fragmentation warhead. 11 civilians were wounded, including people on a commuter train from Kharkiv to Izum, with 7 in hospital. 3 employees with Ukrzaliznitsa were killed and 4 more wounded after a Russian attack on the Donetsk region village of Udachne. The workers were conducting maintenance on the railroad tracks at the time of the attack. Russian forces conducted a double-tap attack in Kherson, wounding 2. The outskirts of the city of Kherson were shelled, and when emergency services arrived, they were attacked by a drone. 1 firefighter and a pensioner were wounded, and a fire truck was damaged. Russian forces also shelled the Kherson suburb of Belozerka, wounding 1. Across Free Kherson Oblast, a total of 6 people were wounded due to Russian aggression. An Iskander-K ballistic cruise missile hit the railroad station in Smila in the Cherkasy Oblast. 6 people were injured and railroad infrastructure was damaged. Additionally, 47 nearby homes were damaged by the shock wave and flying debris. Here is today's action report. We start in Kharkiv Oblast in the Svatov area of Operation Oryo, where Russian forces intensified their attacks, striking Ukrainian defensive positions east of Berestove and Stelmachivka several times without success. Southwest of occupied Svatove, Russian forces also attempted to advance in the direction of Druzhelyubivka. Located almost 10 kilometers west of the known line of conflict, this was likely a squad or platoon-sized sabotage and reconnaissance unit. We expanded the gray area west of Novovodene, where the Russian Ministry of Defense, or ARMAD, reported there was fighting on April the 24th. Further south in the Svatoveyo of Luhansk Oblast, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, or GSAFU, reported a Russian attack in the direction of Makiivka was repulsed. Russia expanded its attacks west of Kremenna, although this does not appear to be part of a larger new offensive. Russian attempts to advance on Terny and Torske ended in failure. GSAFU reported fighting in the area of Zarychne in Donetsk Oblast twice in the last 24 hours. Located west of the Zharabets River and Torske, we are unsure how Russian forces could be attacking in this direction. There were no pictures or videos of fighting in the area, nor claims of a Russian breakthrough at Torske. Fighting restarted in the Serebryansky woods south of Kremenna, with a geolocated video showing that Russian troops have made no new gains. We link to the video of the exploding tank in our Almost Daily Situation report, and there's more information in the podcast description. In the Siversky-Yo of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces continued their attacks southeast of Bilohorivka and restarted the attempts to advance on Verkhnyokamenskoye from Zolotarivka. Moving to the Donbas, in northeastern Donetsk Oblast, fighting continued in the Siversky-Yo of Donetsk Oblast. Russian forces struck Ukrainian positions south of Spirne, and Ukrainian forces struck Russian positions southeast of Vyimka. In the Kostyantynivka-Yo, the Russian offensive on Chasiv Yar remains stalled. Fighting continued on the eastern edge of the Novy micro-district of Chasiv Yar, in Ivanivske and northwest of Klishivka. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, starting in the Avdiivka-Yo, Russian forces continue to flank Ukrainian defensive positions at the Durna River, likely capturing 2 more villages. South of the Turetsk-New York-Yo, ARMAD reported fighting was ongoing northeast of Novoselivka. Fighting continued in the southeastern tip of Novokalinovo, where Russian forces made incremental gains. Russian attacks in the, quote, area of Keramik were repulsed. Russian troops still control 50-60% of Ucheretene. At the time of recording, Russian claims of the complete capture of the settlement are false, but the situation is very dynamic, and Ukrainian forces have not stabilized any of their defensive lines. Russian forces have started to advance south of Novobakhmutivka in the direction of Berdychi after capturing the village on April the 24th. A geolocated video showed that Russian forces had raised a flag on the western edge of the village of Solovyove, setting conditions to advance on Sokol. Another geolocated video showed that Russian troops were at the western edge of Berdychi, but had not established military control. The Ukrainian 47th Mechanized Infantry Brigade continued its fierce resistance. South of Berdychi, the situation was more stable, but fighting continued to be intense. Russian forces were held back at Semenivka, east of Umanska and Yasnobrodivka, and near Netailove. In the Vuhledaryo, Russian forces were able to advance through southeastern Krasnohorivka and reach the refractory factory, raising their flag on the western edge of the compound. The Ukrainian 46th Air Assault Brigade reported that Russian troops could not consolidate their gains and were pushed out. A video showed the flag was removed. The situation is extremely difficult with urban and house-to-house fighting in the southern part of the settlement and the VKS bombing the northern part. Positional fighting continued northwest of Pobeda with no change in the situation. Russian sources made no reports of fighting in the area of Novomikhailivka or Solotke in the direction of Vodyane, while GSAFU reported successfully repulsing Russian attacks. In the Orikhovo of Zaporizhia Oblast, there was only light fighting in the no-man's land south and southeast of Robotyne. The International Atomic Energy Agency, that's the IAEA, released an update on the status of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. IAEA inspectors reported they continue to hear outgoing artillery fire from various locations around the plant. The last drone attack on or near ZNPP was on April the 18th, and there have been no further attacks since the United States House of Representatives approved military aid for Ukraine. An amazing coincidence. Inspectors were allowed to access the ZNPP training center, which Russia claimed was attacked on April the 7th, the 9th, and the 18th. Inspectors could not see the roof and were not given access, with Russian occupiers saying no damage occurred. All reactors remain in cold shutdown, and the IAEA inspected the safety systems for Reactor 3 and noted no issues. Last week, the turbine hall of Reactor 5 was inspected, but access to parts of the building was denied. Today it sounds especially bitter, as we mark 38 years since the Chernobyl catastrophe. In the Khersonyo, Russian forces launched three attacks on Ukrainian positions in Khrynky, suffered losses and retreated. The head of the KGB of Belarus, Ivan Tertel, claimed that special operation forces prevented a planned Lithuanian drone attack on Minsk. The spokesperson for the Lithuanian Armed Forces, Major Gintautas Tsunas, said that this was disinformation and called the claim, quote, nonsense. Živilė Didžgalvienė, the spokesperson for the command of the Lithuanian Armed Forces, also called the statements false, adding that Lithuania has not carried out nor planned hostile actions against any country. Vilmantas Vitkauskas, head of the Lithuanian National Crisis Management Center, said, quote, we have been hearing such narratives for a long time now, and they have become especially active in the Baltic states during NATO defense exercises. Lukashenko was saying similar things in early March. Such statements by the Belarusian KGB should be seen as a continuous hostile provocation and information attack against Lithuania, which has nothing to do with reality. Unquote. Vitkauskas added that the claim was aimed at a domestic audience with the All Belarusian People's Assembly ongoing. During the assembly, the duck potato prince and illegitimate president of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, made sure to remind the world that his country hosts Russian nuclear warheads, and he was so awed by them he hugged one. Not a joke, that's what he said. Here is my theater-wide update. In Mykolaiv, the State Bureau of Investigation has launched a criminal investigation into what caused a vehicle carrying ammunition to explode, killing two soldiers. The car was reportedly overloaded and careless loaded, causing the blast. There were secondary explosions as the ammunition cooked off, wounding five firefighters. There were no indications that the explosion was caused by a Russian strike or an act of intentional sabotage. Ukraine took delivery of three domestically developed and funded by ex-president Petro Poroshenko iPetri electronic warfare systems and deployed them in the east. The iPetri can protect a 20-kilometer dome. The Minister of Agrarian Policy, Mykola Solsky, submitted a letter of resignation to the Verkhovna Rada. Solsky is embroiled in a 2017 scandal where he is accused of acquiring over $7 million in state land under questionable circumstances. Solsky was not part of the Ukrainian government at the time of the transactions and claims he acted only in the capacity of a lawyer for state enterprises and private citizens. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg accused China of being duplicitous, saying, quote, "China says it wants good relations with the West. At the same time, it is Beijing that continues to incite the biggest armed conflict in Europe since the Second World War. These are mutually exclusive aspirations." Unquote. He accused Beijing of working with Moscow and providing an increasing amount of support to its military-industrial complex, including semiconductors, and warned that Russia's internal and external intentions lie in a modern interpretation of its past. Quote, "Currently, the past echoes loudly in Russia's present. Opinions are controlled, freedom is limited, and opposition is suppressed. And as Russia has become increasingly oppressive at home, it has become more aggressive abroad, waging a full-scale war in Ukraine." Unquote. The Royal United Services Institute shared intelligence and satellite images showing a ship called Angara that departed North Korea and is bound for Vladivostok, Russia, is docked in the Chinese port of Zhoushan. According to Reuters Thomson, the United States Department of State has requested an explanation. John Rich, the spokesman of CSIS, said that the Boeing Saab-developed ground-launched small-diameter bomb has been ineffective in Ukraine. Rich cited the design of the GLSDB, the tactics applied by Ukrainian forces, and effective GPS jamming by Russia. A NATO alliance nation would have access to better technology to counter Russian electronic warfare, but that equipment is not available to Ukraine due to its classified nature. The British newspaper Financial Times reported that Greece has refused to supply Patriot and Soviet-era S-300 air defense systems to Ukraine after rampant speculation that a deal was close. Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis said that Greece, quote, "cannot lose weapon systems that are critical to our deterrence." Despite efforts by German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, only €150 million from the Netherlands has been raised to create an air defense coalition for Ukraine. The Federal Minister of the Defense of Germany, Boris Pistorius, called out European hypocrisy. Quote, "I believe that it hasn't escaped many of you that I'm not shy to criticize my own government. But the latest episode in reference to Patriot batteries, where Germany promised the third system, also exposed the apparent lack of other European nations to follow up." The Minister of Defense of Denmark, Troels Lund Poulsen, said that funds allocated for Ukraine in 2024 were already exhausted, and Copenhagen was adding another $630 million in military and financial support. Pentagon spokesperson Patrick Ryder said that the United States has, quote, "already started the process of delivering some of the weapons, ammunition, and equipment that will be there in Ukraine in a few days, if not sooner," adding that the most critical needs will be delivered first. After the Defense of Ukraine Working Group meeting planned for today, the United States is expected to announce a $6 billion military aid package to Ukraine. It's time for another trip to the land of Mobix, Mobilization and the Mir. The Russian Officers Killed in Ukraine project, or ROKUP, recorded 4,000 confirmed deaths since February 24, 2022, maintaining an average of 5 officers killed a day. Since Russia expanded its war of aggression, 7 generals, 92 colonels, 226 lieutenant colonels, 439 majors, 671 captains, 1,071 senior lieutenants, 761 lieutenants, 163 junior lieutenants, and 570 officers of unknown rank have died. The ROKUP uses obituary announcements, press releases from the Russian Ministry of Defense, newspaper articles, and memorial announcements to confirm the deaths. The count does not include officers from the 1st and 2nd Army Corps of the so-called Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republic, Chechen forces, or senior leaders of private military companies. The actual number is higher. Public records showed that in March 2024, 684 Russian soldiers were convicted of desertion, a new single-month record. Since partial mobilization was announced on September 21, 2022, over 7,400 Russian troops have been convicted. An estimated 1.5 million men of conscription age have fled Russia since February 2022. Former mercenaries of the defunct private military company Wagner Group recorded a video appealing to Russian autocrat Vladimir Putin for help. Only 5% of Wagnerites have received earned state awards, veteran status, pension, and disability payments previously promised. Moscow has broken multiple promises since former leader Yevgeny Prigozhin and Russian Minister of Defense Sergei Shoigu had a falling out in May 2023. On the subject of PMC Wagner, since Russia started Project K in July 2022, mobilizing convicted criminals from prisons and penal colonies, returning mercenaries have murdered and severely wounded over 200 people. And that's what we know. Join me again on Monday. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening,